Hi, this is Chris Spangle, host of We're Libertarians. Greg is here sitting silently drinking a beer while I talk, and I just want to thank you all very much. We asked you all to support the podcast, and many of you responded. I want to read some of those names here in just a second, but we've asked you to start contributing and asking you if you like the product, if you like what we do here, help us support the show, help grow the show. We have big plans, or at least I have big plans in my head, and I want to make this thing into a real podcast someday. So we need your help to offset some of the costs as we grow. Things get more expensive to run here at We're Libertarians, and we figured instead of getting a second job, we'd start asking you to help offset some of those costs. And many of you responded. Some of you $5 a month. Some of you a $5 one-time fee. One person's donated, a couple people have actually donated $50, $20 a month. Bruce Kendall, our emotional support animal, he's a dog and he gave $10. So come on, people. We got $15 in Canadian money even, which I forget who did that because it was such, no, I'm not saying his name. It was an insult. No, thanks, Paul. Here are just a few people who are supporting We Are Libertarians by going to wearelibertarians.com and hitting the PayPal or the Patreon button. If you don't know what Patreon is, every time we put out an episode, you pay whatever you've pledged to donate. So if we don't work, then we don't get paid. How libertarian is that? So I want to thank Richard McGurr, Tim. Listen, I'm going to obliterate your names. I'm going to tell you that right now. I'm not going to pronounce your names. I apologize in advance. I'm not doing it out of disrespect because you are honored wall listeners. Richard McGurr, Tim McCusick, nailed it. Jennifer Himmelberg, CJ Rodine, Aaron Jones, Mark English, our good buddy, Joseph Elick, Jason Doolittle, David Bordwine, nailed it. Kirk French Jr., Sam Naimi, Christopher Lane, Dennis Byington, Shira Cash, and a couple businesses. I don't know if they meant to use their businesses, but you should support these businesses nonetheless. Rough Tail Brewing and Hard to Find Beauty. Thank you guys for contributing to the podcast, for contributing to our growth, and helping to spread the message of libertarianism. We really do appreciate it. It is, you put out something like that and you go, gee, I don't know if anybody's going to actually contribute. And man, that list really surprised us. You guys, you've helped offset costs for hosting. You've helped pay for advertising and, putting a down payment on some future equipment. So thank you very much for donating. You guys are awesome. So now we are going to get back to the regularly scheduled program. Here is me. Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. I'm Chris Spangle, dear leader sitting on his throne. And to my left is, you're at my left a lot lately. It must be all that Trump supporting you're doing lately.
I know. I'll tell you what. I am Captain Liberal right now.
Greg Lenz. To my right is Jeremiah, what's your last name? Morrell? Moral?
We'll go with Moral today.
So. All right. Moral. The legend of Henry County. You may have, if you've ever been involved in 4-H, you may have heard him showing goats or something like that.
You don't make a lot of noise showing goats, okay. If you do it right. but if you do it wrong, I guess there probably is some screaming.
And with us is Rex Bell, the Thomas Paine Award winner of the National Libertarian Party for communicating libertarianism. So we expect a lot out of you today.
All hail, dear leader.
There you go. Got it. He got it right.
So this is really just a kissing the ring ceremony.
He
huh?
got it right out of the gate.
Oh, my God.
Rex.
Can only go up from here.
Oh, boy.
Rex is, he's run for a couple of offices here in Indiana. And in 2010, he ran for State House District 54. And he is the first libertarian, or no, he's the first third party candidate in a three-way race for House in Indiana. To get more than 20%. So you almost beat the Democrat.
I beat the Democrat in Wayne County.
Oh, wow.
That time. It was three counties involved in District 54 at the time. So we felt, real good that we had gained that much ground that we were able to finished second.
Yeah.
Since he did that, no Democrat has even challenged that race since. Right. Right. Scared them right off the ballot.
You are now. We don't normally do candidate interviews, so we're not going to dwell on your candidacy too much because this is a national show. But you're running for governor of Indiana for the Libertarian ticket, correct?
That's correct.
Why would you want to do something like that?
That's a good question. I wish I had a good answer. It's a matter of the public. You know, we've seen so many polls about people getting tired of the old parties, the Republicans and Democrats, and we think that the Libertarians have the right answers, and we think we've gained enough ground over the year. We've won districts. We've, finished ahead of the major parties in certain areas. And as the Libertarian Party has grown and we've had pockets of support around the state, we think this is an excellent year, an excellent opportunity to expand some of these pockets and bring them together. Basically, was why I got into it. I think it's important to maintain our Libertarian message. Maintain our Libertarian values. There's a lot that needs to be done pragmatically, working with the other parties and the legislature and what we have to do to work towards our goal. We don't expect to get there overnight, but we think that we need candidates that will stay true to the message. And so that's why I'm into it. I think I offer the best. I've been called by... And one of the highest honors I've ever had was when the dear leader called me authentically libertarian. Mm-hmm. And I hope that I am, and that's what I'm going to try to be.
Yeah, I mean, for me, libertarianism is not just a political belief system. It's also a way of life. I think it's the way that you live. And not to be the one that decides who and who is not libertarian, a la the Pope of libertarianism. But Rex really does live a life that is libertarian, you know, and you're somebody that I've worked with, gosh, I've known and been around for 7 years now. Has it been that long? 7-8 years. And Rex has been truly committed to the libertarian cause and is a person of upstanding moral character, and I've never heard anybody say a bad word about him. So... He's also a writer. He's also a great writer and a great storyteller. And you wrote a book called Stinky Shorts.
Correct.
It's not about your underpants.
No, it's not.
It is. What was the basis of the book?
Well, Stinky Shorts is short stories about Stinky Wilmot. And Stinky Wilmot was a friend of mine growing up at Millville Grade School. And basically, it's about life lessons that I learned from dealing with Stinky. Things I learned from Stinky, things I learned from what other people did to Stinky. And basically what I call it, it's a lighthearted look at the serious problem of government overreach. Mm-hmm. So we try to keep it entertaining where people won't start reading the book and say, oh my gosh, I can't get through this. You know? So that's kind of what we strive for.
It's not a difficult read, and I don't mean that in an insulting way.
Well, this was a short episode.
No, it's...
Come back, Rex.
Libertarian parables, almost.
Yeah,
is a good way to put it. Yeah, so is it available? Can you still buy a copy? I know it's been a few years since you printed them, but...
They're still available. You can go to... www.stinkyshorts.com.
All right.
It's a website. You can get them there or contact me and I'll get one to you.
All right. So check out rexbell.com too. And he's written a lot there. And you'll be hearing more a lot of him out as he's on the trail. And when you say we have made the decision, we all know you mean the boss, Susan Bell. Your lovely wife. She's the Hagerstown judge, and she's been elected and then reelected, what, 3 more times?
She's been elected 4 times.
All right.
She's going for her 5th time this fall.
Oh, man. She's part of the establishment in Hagerstown now, isn't she?
She is establishment. You know, this is something that weighs heavy on me.
Bro. Right. So,
have you tried to detach yourself like Jeb of George W.?
Absolutely not.
Condemn certain policies of the judge.
Right. So she actually, there was a funny story a few years ago. A guy paid in a funny way. Can you talk about that? that instance where the guy came in and...
With the seatbelt violation.
Yes, that's it.
He brought in and was going to pay it in pennies.
If you get a seatbelt violation in Indiana, it's a $25 fine.
Yes, right. It's a $25 fine. He brought in $25 in pennies, which he had unrolled and dumped into a bucket.
Which, by my math, is roughly 8,073 pennies.
That's exactly right, Chris.
Right, thank you.
I didn't have an exact count, but thank you for clarifying that. But at any rate, when he brought this money in and Susan said, you know, here's the deal, you're talking to the wrong person. You know, being libertarians, it's something that we're opposed to, forcing somebody to wear their seatbelt. It's already been upheld by a higher court. This is a town court. You know, a judge in a town court can't overrule the Indiana appellate court. It's
right.
Just the way it's a reality.
Right.
She said, you know, as much as I sympathize with you, the only way we can do this is if you'll stay here while my clerk counts all these pennies and we roll them back up. You know, you're probably going to, and she's doing other things. So it's probably going to take 4 or 5 hours of your time. I sympathize with you fully. You need to be talking to the legislature instead of talking to a town court judge. Your anger, it's displaced is what it amounts to. He understood fully. He paid his fine, I think, with a cash or a money order. They won't take personal checks. Another issue that's we have nothing to do with. But and then donated the 2,500 pennies to charity.
Nice.
Yeah,
it ended up making national news. So it's we're going to talk a little bit about misplaced anger because there's a lot of people making brash decisions out of misplaced anger these days, in politics especially, and on Facebook. So we're going to give you a life lesson, libertarians. Pay attention. We're going to teach you something later. Greg always like, we're not going to have audience left if you keep this up.
All preachy today.
Because
originally we planned to spread liberty, and it is clearly not that anymore.
It is me yelling at people.
Let me tell you something about you that you don't know, libertarians.
Me cursing and yelling at people. I have vowed to the saintly Rex Bell that I will not curse in this podcast, and when I fail at that, then I will edit it out.
Well, and too, you know, I think this is the most interesting governor's race, you know, since that's the candidacy Rex is seeking that has been in Indiana in quite some time, because not since what, Frank O'Bannon was the last Democratic governor?
Yeah, that's Frank died in office, so his lieutenant governor was Joe Kernan, okay. And he took over.
Right.
So yeah, we had the reign of like 12 years of Democrat governors. Evan Bayh, who became a U.S. senator later, had 2 terms as governor.
Mm-hmm.
His lieutenant governor, Frank O'Bannon, IU basketball legend, Frank O'Bannon, was governor, and then unfortunately he passed while he was in office, and his lieutenant governor Joe Kernan took over for the balance of his term.
And then Mitch came in.
Yeah, then it was Mitch, and then we had the contested last year. So 2012 was closer than anticipated, given Mike Pence's status as, you know, King Republican, or most likely to be the Iowa caucus winner in 2016, until that all fell apart.
Yeah, and he really, if you think about it, he was like the front runner in 2012, and everybody during that campaign said there's no doubt that he's going to be setting up shop in Iowa anytime soon. And about 9 months after he was elected governor, it was September of 2013 that I started hearing rumors that he was polling in Iowa already.
Yeah. So. I thought it was that Gravis marketing firm that he contracted out to. And Ted Cruz never happens if Mike Pence is not totally messed up his first term and then watched everything fall deeply apart.
Because Mike Pence has never run anything in his entire life. He's never run a business. So, and he ran against the former Speaker of the House, John Gregg, a Democrat who is a Blue Dog Democrat, a Southern Democrat, a guy from Southern Indiana that, you know, real folksy, nice guy, real dirty campaigner. So preparing you, Rex. And is a guy who... Rupert was the Libertarian candidate. Rupert was the only one in that race and the first candidate in Indiana history for governor to fully support LGBT rights in every way, shape, and form. That's because John Gregg didn't think that...
was to the right of Mike Pence.
Right. And now that he's running against him again, and it's going to be Pence and Gregg and hopefully Rex Bell, he's like, no, gays should be able. I'll do the weddings. It's fine. I'll do the weddings. It's okay.
I've evolved.
It's the greatest 180 in 3 years that any candidate has ever performed.
I talked
a miracle happened. A miracle happened.
I talked to Rupert last night, and Rupert's like, oh, we got to get on the Twitter. He's like, I can't take it anymore. I've got to start getting back. He's jonesing for some political action. So, but he's like, oh, I just listened to these guys talk, and I can't believe I lost to these idiots.
Well, has that played a role for you whatsoever in deciding to pursue this? Because, you know, it is something where there's a large majority of, especially Marion County citizens and voters that aren't represented by either of the major two parties on this position until John Gregg's, which I don't buy his support. Like, if forced to sign legislation, it would never happen, in my opinion. But did that play a role for you, wanting to, you know, represent a
group? Yeah, wanting to represent everybody, you know, yeah, plays a role in it. Yeah, I'm with you on Gregg, you know. I mean, this comes along as what's convenient. You know, when you look at the Libertarian Party, we've stood by our values and our stands start to finish, you know, and I think that people realize that. I think that's what's going to start bringing the support to us, people that say, now, wait a minute, this is what these guys have been saying all along. We can trust them to stick to their values, and I think that's important. And I think we can see now, with the other parties, you can't.
No.
We've seen it for years. I think more and more people will see it now. But, yeah, you know, I want to see everybody represented. Everybody has the same protections. Not one group over the other, not giving special favors to one group. You know, that's not how it's supposed to work. This is not what we want our government to do for us. So, you know, I think it's one of the major things that will help us this year,
yeah,
is that we have stuck to our guns over the years.
How would a libertarian, I mean, in Indiana, basically what happened, we've covered it on the show, it was something called RFRA, R-F-R-A, and they basically, give the details of RFRA a little bit, because I'm foggy on it. It made me so mad at the time, but I've forgotten it, because it's just Republicans. They basically wanted to pass a law or rewrite a law that said that, you know, there was a religious exemption, right?
Right, yeah, that's essentially what happened. In 2014... The Republicans wound up with a historic supermajority in the House and the Senate, along with the governor's office.
And Brian Bosma is the Speaker of the House, the leader of the Republican supermajority, and he said, no funny business, meaning no gay stuff. And what was the very first thing they did, Jeremiah?
They couldn't help themselves. They just couldn't help themselves. And there's a very conservative group that calls themselves Advance America now. And they had a handful of legislators that advanced their agenda, and they put a law in place that was legitimately unnecessary, because they tried to create a separate class,
right,
a religious class of people, and to protect rights that already were protected. But they essentially put into place the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which is RFRA, and unfortunately for the administration and the other members of the Indiana General Assembly that already voted for it, the Advance America group peacocked and strutted all over the place.
They did, yeah.
Talking about how they had essentially codified some sort of discrimination in code for the state of Indiana.
Discrimination cloaked in freedom.
The cloaked right. Yes, exactly. And it had already cleared the two General Assemblies, essentially. So it had gotten through the House, got through the Senate. And then the big kerfuffle that everybody saw, I guess it would have been March of last year, was that little week in between when it made it out of the General Assembly and when the governor had to sign it. And instead of being smart enough to pull the plug at that point, he said, nope, I'm going to have a
double
signing
down
ceremony. And he brought in
a closed signing ceremony.
He had a closed signing ceremony with every religious leader known to man in any sort of decorative regalia that you want, and there's a picture that I don't know how they ever thought that it would be a good image for the governor, but they did it.
They didn't. It was the America Family Institute, or the Indiana Family Institute people, that tweeted out the photo, because they had essentially figured out that there was never going to be a constitutional amendment to keep marriage between a man and a woman. And so this was their bonus prize. This was their make good on that.
Yep.
And so they were showing off, and they took this photo that is ridiculous. and put it out there, and the Pence people were so mad.
It looks like a comedy sketch. All of those religions are obviously legitimate and understandable, but the staging and the theatrics of what they chose to do, just advisors were not consulted, or they were tuned out, and it showed how out of tune that the governor is.
When I saw that picture, I said, somebody's photoshopped this, haven't they?
Yeah.
This is a meme, isn't it?
I think it was you.
I can neither comment nor deny.
I think it was actually you that messaged me and said, did Greg make that? Because it was so ridiculous. So all that. Would libertarians or would Governor Rex Bell have introduced RFRA? What would you have done in that case?
Well, when they start talking about singling out a group, making this group special, as libertarians, we have to believe in freedom of association. We have to get to the point where we're saying marriage is none of the government's business, and that's where I think we need to be heading with this thing, is allowing people to do their own thing. When we start saying we're going to allow one group of people to be sanctioned by the government, but this group of people we're not going to be sanctioned by the government. I think when we get into a situation where we can say, you're allowed to do what you want to, you're allowed to decide who you want to marry and who you don't want to marry. We can't force you to accept it. We can't force you not to do it. I think that's where we need to be as libertarians. It's one of those things I talk about, one of the things where we are and where we want to be farther down the road. I think what we need to be working towards is that goal of getting government in its proper place, and government's proper place is not defining relationships.
And so in the meantime, those who would like to get gay married, those who would like to have a gay marriage or a gay wedding ceremony, they should be treated equally under the law.
Definitely. Under the law, it would be, you would definitely be treated equally under the law.
Yeah.
And everybody's treated equal under the law. If somebody has some type of a phobia, something where they say, I can't support this, fine, don't support it. You don't
marry a gay person.
No, don't marry a gay person. I don't have any problem with that. You do what you want to do. I have a problem with somebody telling me that I can't do it. I have somebody telling me that I have to do it, or that I can't support it, or I have to support
it. Right, so fundamentally, it comes down to force. It's
definitely, that's what it's all about.
An outside force like the government shouldn't be forcing you to violate your religious beliefs, just as much as the government shouldn't be forcing you to not be allowed to marry the person of your choice.
Definitely.
Right. Seems fairly easy to understand.
This is what I can understand. It is so simple. What's the problem?
Right.
Why do people have a problem with this?
Part of the hypocrisy is Republicans, one, branding themselves as constitutionalists and small government types, and then two, they handled it just terribly, because there actually was a discussion on the libertarian side of that argument, which was it's the expansion of a law, but because it undoes or it enhances freedom from some perspectives. There were some Christian right libertarians that supported it.
The law as it was crafted was extremely complicated.
Yeah.
And you could look at it, and I legitimately, as a evangelical Christian who's also a libertarian, I looked at the thing for a week and a half, and it was just simply an unnecessary law.
Right.
That, if you look at the Constitution, everybody's protected and everybody's an individual. You don't need to play this game of trying to protect classes. Chris is exactly right. It was sorry we lost this last battle for you guys, but here you go.
Yeah.
We got the supermajority. We're going to move on.
Rex, do you think that this is going to be the dominant issue in the campaign?
In certain areas, it will be. In some of the larger cities, it's a dominant issue. When we get out into, say, Wayne County, it's an important issue. It's not the dominant issue.
Right.
Places that are losing jobs now, that will be the dominant issue for them. It varies. We don't have one button that we can push and say everybody is going to support us on this.
So you live in a rural area. What are some of the things that rural areas are most struggling with right now? What are the main issues in rural America?
Well, jobs are always the main issue in that area, or one of the main issues. And we saw with Carrier leaving this week.
Carrier, here you go, Jeremiah. Carrier is an what, the air conditioner company?
Air conditioning company.
They're moving 3,000 jobs to Mexico.
They're pulling out, and that's pretty scary. We have in Wayne County, we have a German company that's coming in, 240 jobs they're bringing in. So we're in a condition now with the economy, with jobs, where companies move around. And what we need to do is make Indiana friendly for businesses. That's an important thing. That's an issue for all counties. Roads are important everywhere. When you get over in Wayne County, I put my life on the line when I go to Richmond from Hagerstown, because I drive on Interstate 70 between 27 and 40.
Oh my!
Is so rough.
Get your map out, folks.
This is a very rough section of road. You have to drive in the left lane, which that's a $500 fine if you're driving in the left lane and not passing somebody. But you absolutely cannot keep your vehicle on the road in the right lane. This is an issue, and something that we've harped on since I ran for state representative the first time. Take our road use taxes, put it on the road. We've been hollering for that.
What's the issue with that? Road use taxes.
Sending it out on other things. What we send to Washington that goes to museums and parks and walking trails and
trips to Ibiza.
Indiana is doing better now.
But you pay for public transportation. Those dollars don't always go back into the road. They end up just lost or frittered away or spent.
Definitely.
They don't make it all back into the highways.
It's just like welfare. Only 43 cents of every dollar collected, it makes it to the recipient. Yeah. So it's pointless to give 57 cents to a bureaucrat.
And when they come in and say that, and we talk about what the issues are in roads, and when they come out and say, well, we're going to kick it back to the counties and you can put a wheel tax on and help pay for the roads. Well, Henry County did that. I think, 75% of the wheel tax goes to the pension fund, or I don't know the exact amount.
The local officials end up having to deal with all kinds of different arbitrary formulas, and we don't want to get too far into the weeds on this stuff, but you get to where the locals are very handcuffed, and they've got all the rules that they have to comply with, and Washington tells your state capital what to do, and then your state capital tells your locals what to do, and the next thing you know, your poor local highway administrator's got to wait for a report, and he's got seven different categories of money, and he can only spend certain things on certain items, and it gets very complicated, and they have the best intentions, but they get so overburdened by what's happening up above them in the food chain.
It's an unfunded mandate, top down. Yeah. And then if you do get any help or assistance, there's so many strings attached, it makes it so unattractive, there's no reason to.
And I don't know of anybody that goes out and says, we don't want good roads. Everybody wants good roads. And I've maintained all along that if the government will take our road use taxes and spend every bit of it on the roads, and then if we find out that's not enough money, then come back and talk to us then. What I disapprove of is spending the money on something else and then coming back and say, we don't have enough money for the roads. You're going to have to kick in a little bit more. Yeah. So, what I would like to see, and I've said that many times and across the board, our road use taxes, all of our use taxes and user fees, they should go where they're supposed to go. Don't take them on the premise of fixing the roads and spend it on something else. Let's get that straightened out. That's something that's important across the state right now, I think.
So you're running for governor as a libertarian, but not a total anarchist. You're still okay with stop signs and stoplights.
Yes, I'm not a libertarian that says, we need to have privately owned roads. I don't care who owns the roads. I know that if we're going to have roads, somebody's got to pay for them. It should be the people that use them, which falls to us. Who manages them?
That's a discussion for a later date.
That's on down the road. Right now, when I talk about where we are now and where we want to be, and that's what we're moving towards, but I don't think we need to concentrate on getting the roads out of government control. Right? There's so much more that we need to address
And that water's for you, Rex, because totally forgot to offer you something to drink. These two have beer.
We're Lushes, yeah.
It's Bell's beer.
That's right.
Exactly right.
We're having Bell's Two-Hearted Ale, which is a fine, fine I don't know if it's an independent beer or not.
But. Yeah, it's a microbrew. It's no Dutch apple pie, which I was looking around, and that's quite tough to come upon in Indiana. But I thought at worst I can provide you some Bell's beer.
So what are your top issues? Like, what are the things that you think your campaign will eventually? What are the messages that you will be driving home as you move forward in the campaign?
Well, the roads, the use of our tax money. The correct use of our tax money would definitely be something we would lead in with. I'm real concerned about the pensions, the state pensions that we have being so underfunded. They borrowed from them, stole from them. I think we need to start looking down the road a little bit at that, how we're going to address that issue, which I've had some ideas on that.
You've always been a big proponent of the 10th Amendment as well, right?
The 10th Amendment is definitely, and I've... I know it may be too soon, but I think with the what we're getting ready to see on the Supreme Court, I think the 10th Amendment is going to be even more important now.
Explain the 10th Amendment. Not everybody's
The 10th Amendment says that if it's not expressly granted, if the federal government is not expressly granted the power in the Constitution, then it's left up to the states and the individuals to decide whether or not a law that comes down from Washington, whether or not we want to abide by it. And I think that's a legitimate protection that was put in the Constitution early on. It's something that we haven't used for years and years because for a long time we didn't have to. Then when it got to the point we had to start using it or needed to start using it, we had already turned over so much to Washington, sent them so much money that they were bribing us back, bribing us with our own money to give it back to us. It's not a good situation to be in now, but I'm tickled to death that we have those 10th Amendment protections. And it's not something that one state can do alone. It's something that we're going to have 15 or 20 states step up and say, no, we're not going to abide by that ruling there.
So how do you as a libertarian candidate, what would you, if you were governor, say to the people that just lost their jobs at Carrier? How do we, in Indiana, we have such a big issue with this transition from an industrial state to what?
An information economy.
I mean, it's really, we're struggling like the rest of the Midwest, the rest of the Rust Belt. How do you transition from industrial to technological jobs? And how, but in between there, though, Greg, is a lot of people who have spent their whole lives working in industrial jobs and don't have the skill set to do information jobs for the most part. So how do you as governor propose that we manage that transition, and what do you say to the people who just lost their jobs at Carrier?
It's a bad situation. I wish there was a magic button we could push and make jobs, and we don't really have that option. But I think what we need to do, we talk about losing 1,400 jobs, 2,000 jobs when one company moves out. We need to have a business friendly state that will attract not just large businesses, small businesses. When we stop and look at where the majority of the jobs are, they're in small businesses. That's what provides the biggest part. And we need to make the state friendly to that. We had and I told a story last weekend, a lady over by Hagerstown that was just had a small sewing shop. And come to find out she wasn't zoned for sewing, so they come in and shut her down.
How dare she?
This is not the type of thing. I'm not talking about somebody that's dumping pollutants into a stream. We're talking about somebody that's trying to do a small business job.
Sew people's clothes that want it.
Yeah. That's not going to bring a lot of jobs in, but if we had 10,000 shops that hired 10 to 12 people, that's something that we can do in this area. I've got a nephew that works at a little machine shop where there's just two guys. That's not the kind of thing that gets headlines.
Right.
Bell Contracting has four employees. We've been kicking along for 42 years. We create other jobs, subs, suppliers. It's the type of thing that can survive if it's a little blip. If I drop over tomorrow and Bell Contracting closes up, it's not going to be the end of the world, not like Carrier moving that many jobs out, you know. So I'm not saying that we have to completely concentrate on small business, but I think it's something we need to look at everything. We need to be inclusive and acceptive of all businesses.
Yeah, I think for the most part, people are employed by small businesses. People with 50 or 75 less. I mean, what's the definition of a small business according to the government?
500 or less?
Yeah, 500 or less. And technically, a small business would be under 100, and medium-sized business starts at 100 or 1.
Yeah, and 80% of the country is employed in that situation.
Yeah, and to think that you're doing things that are prohibitive to the creation and entrepreneurship, and really, like, that translates over to economics. It's the efficient use of resources. I mean, right. It is the most efficient way to use the limited stuff we have in the state and our communities. And what I hear is, like, the 10th Amendment, you know, you're kind of hamstrung because the federal government is going to dictate to you, this is our national trade policy. This is like with NAFTA. That's why it's so easy to move down to Mexico, and we have, you know, ideally free trade things set in place. So what defense does anyone really have against a government that's working against you locally except the 10th Amendment, where, you know, you can stop things like NAFTA from being widely adopted and or at least have more input into a national trade agreement? You know, libertarianism, I've always thought, is really just governing locally. It's individuals in their communities deciding how they should live, and then a bare bones agreement on what those rules are. And then from there, as long as it doesn't harm each other.
Over time, we have an economy that's always going to have some unemployment. You know, over time, 5% is kind of a frictional unemployment number.
We define that as full employment.
Exactly. 5% is considered full employment. And below that number is frictional, where people are, you know, somebody closed, somebody moved, you're changing jobs, you've made a decision. So 5% is considered full employment. As much as we would love to have all of the major employers that are around, sometimes you just simply aren't going to – you're not going to keep everybody. So at times, Ford is going to decide they're going to assemble cars in Mexico because it's cheaper, and it's just a reality. At this point, Carrier is going to move 2,100 jobs from Indiana to Mexico, and my heart breaks for those folks, but, you know, you could be the world's greatest manufacturer of buggy whips, but we went from horses to cars, and there are just not that many buggy whips sold anymore. There are realities of an economy, and the nice thing in the local Indiana news today, some small businesses have said, hey, I know that there's 2,100 jobs that are going away, but Crane Works in Morristown, Indiana, which is just down the street from where my folks are, they're hiring 8 people, and they are reaching out to the Carrier people and saying, hey, we understand where you're coming from, and come join us. And that's kind of a neat one, because they actually have just continued to grow and grow and grow, and they make crane parts.
But see, this is sort of what libertarians harp on the most, is that it's all about personal responsibility. You should be prepared to lose your job at any time. So it is incumbent upon you to keep your skills up in multiple different areas.
Unless you work for the government, of course, that being the...
Right, and then when those jobs go away, everybody cries out to the government to save them. Help me, help me, help me. It's your responsibility to make sure that I'm employed. And that's really a messed up view. The government doesn't owe you anything, and it shouldn't owe you anything. In fact, you should want it out of your way, because the more cranes that there are, the more jobs are available when a carrier leaves. I mean, life is about destruction and rebirth. There's always an end and a beginning to everything. And in an economy, especially a free market economy, a libertarian economy, you're going to have more opportunities when something is destroyed. You're going to have more opportunities for rebirth. So it's a constant cycle. And the problem is that too many people think that someone else owes them a job instead of saying, I could create a job. And we need to build an environment, a creative environment, that will allow people the freedom to begin their own projects so they can start employing more people.
They don't have to have $2,500 to go and get all the appropriate licenses to set up shop, you know. When they just lost their job, they can't justify that, or they have no working capital because that's all the savings they have to get properly licensed. And it's, you know, government does create a lot of it. And, you know, it's a tough sell to say to somebody, well, you didn't anticipate the economy changing. That's not a vote getter. You're not going to win a lot of elections telling that. But what you can do, and I think a nice medium is there are the retraining opportunities in the community colleges they try to partner with to create these things. And I don't necessarily totally disagree with those, because unemployment insurance is something that already comes out of your taxes. So you're taking advantage
by force. Try to get out of there,
Greg.
Yeah,
so like you're taking advantage of something you really not at all. You're just getting back what you paid. And you'd be crazy not to do the retraining, because, you know, it isn't. Unemployment is cyclical, and then there's structural. And the reality is, we don't have cyclical unemployment. We have structural unemployment and a mismatch in skill sets.
I would suggest anybody that says that they've paid into unemployment, get your pay stub out and find it on there.
Mm-hmm.
Because it comes from the employer pays it. The employer pays unemployment. Employees don't. And that's always been my point. I don't have any problem with it if it's an insurance policy, but the employees should pay into it. So, you know, that's the type of thing that, you know, it's one of those things that people should help themselves on that. If you feel that you're in danger of losing your job, if you feel that you're in danger of wrecking your car, you get insurance on it just in case something like that happens.
Part of the problem with having the one problem with having the highest corporate tax rate in the world, in the free world, is that carrier goes to Mexico because you can get cheaper labor. So there's less incentive for them to stay here because they can't make as much because they're paying more in taxes. Business taxes are double taxation. You get your income taxed, and then you get taxed again because the business just basically passes on the cost of taxes to their customers, so we pay higher prices. There's a problem. So when a government taxes a corporation, they have to find money from one of three sources. Number one is they pay less to their shareholders. Well, that's not going to make them a good investment, so it makes it harder for them to get capital raised, so they're not going to do that. Second is to raise their prices. Well, in a competitive environment, you can't do that because then people will stop buying your product, and then your company's hosed. Excuse me.
And then you have carrier moving.
Right. So the third way is to suppress wages and pay your employees less and offer them less benefits. And so if you look at the pay stub of my parents when they graduated high school and my pay stub when I graduated high school, we're making the same amount of money according to inflation. I'm actually making a little less. And yet the cost of goods, the cost of a house, the cost of a car between 1975 and 2005 is it goes from $5,000 for a car to $35,000 for a brand new car. So that higher taxation is what it's causing you to make less of a paycheck. So when all these Bernie Sanders bots sit there and say,
Bernie bros,
what's the solution? Well, we need to tax the rich people more. It's like, no, that's the exact opposite of what we ought to be doing. So, you know, what are some ways that you as governor could make it easier for people to start a small business? Or, I mean, you're a small business owner. What are ways that the government interacts with you that keep you from hiring more employees, keep you from being more profitable?
Well, you know, one thing that when we try to go into, Newcastle, if we want to go into Newcastle and work, we can't. We have to get a license before we can even work there. When we go to Randolph County, you have to get a separate license to work in Randolph County. One thing that we run into trying to hire people, we pay way more than minimum wage. We figure if somebody's not worth, you know, at least a certain amount, they're probably not going to work into our program. We found out that it's tough to compete with the government. What the government pays people for not working, it's tough to compete with that. You know, if you, we were trying to hire somebody last fall. We had a pretty good sized job coming up. I took out an ad on Facebook. Said, you know, we need somebody that's probably going to be a job last 2 weeks. If it works out well, it could turn into a permanent position. It was shared several times. I think like 1,400 or 1,500 people saw it. One person showed up for the job. I hired him, told him to be there the next morning. He hadn't shown up since, and that was back in October. So, you know, when we have an opening for a job that pays $10 an hour starting, and you can't get people to show up for that, that's something that that we run into, where we're competing with the government for that. I know that, like I said, the permitting process we have to get, being zoned correctly to open a small business. There's just a
getting bonded in case you get sued.
And I don't, you know, I think a person needs to be responsible. I think that's up to the customer to check with the, you know, to check out your credentials. I think that's the two people making a deal.
You don't need the government to step in for you. If you're a responsible owner of a project, and you make sure that they're bonded. And
especially when none of them are contractors.
And it creates more jobs in the testing where you get a Consumer Reports or an Angie's List that helps vet people and gives you preferred vendors.
Yeah, you know, I've never been real impressed with any recommendation that the government made for us.
Right.
You know, I would rather take somebody's word on this is, you know, we used this person and we were happy with him, we were not happy with him. The fact that you went and got a license, the last time we worked in Randolph County, it was $50, you know, and they give you this real nice looking. It was a nice.
They spent at least $25 on it, didn't they?
I tried to hang it on the wall. Susan said no. You know? but I said, you know, I could have walked in there not owning a hammer and got this.
Sure.
You know, it was nothing but just something that.
Just the government, matter of paperwork.
The government got a $50, and we had to charge the customer an extra $50.
Cartel behavior.
Yeah, it's one of those things that there's so much we could get government out of. If they would just, you know, protect us from force and fraud. If some guy comes in and tries to cheat you or misrepresents, you know, and you need to have a protection from that. From that fraud, you know, that's what the government should do, the courts-wise. But this other stuff is just an obstacle for people making a living on their own.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. There's so much hoopla. It's
well-intentioned originally, and then it just morphs into this.
Is it? I think it's really more about income collection.
Well, before, like, you know, people like Rex, you know, before there were licenses and or things like that, you know, books like Upton Sinclair's The Jungle, about the robber barons, you know, exploiting the they didn't have government oversight of the
products
they offered.
That was a liberal piece of liberal propaganda, and it's 100 years old. I get it. I understand.
No, but I mean, like, that when people don't have complete information, they fall victim to that. Like,
but here's the problem. We live in the digital age where the problem with 100 years ago in that environment, walking through in the 1870s through the Five Points, and you had 10 people living in a house. Nobody knew how the other half lived. And there was this guy that had developed, you know, he had brought over flash photography. It was one of the first photography sessions ever in the country. And he radically changed government and radically changed the lives of those people because people saw the imagery of how those people are living. In this day and age, it is so easy to tell a story. It's so easy. There's too many stories being told.
Right. It's just the government hasn't adjusted or adapted to the, you know, limitless information and the ability to verify.
The government isn't some amorphous, immovable blob. It is us. And if enough of us actually did something about it, we could fix it.
Right. It's just when politics, the way to win is to scare, motivate through fear, of loss, you know, sensationalized stories.
I don't feel like Donald Trump is a person that motivates his crowd by fear.
Somebody's doing the raping.
Well, that's true. I mean, there's a lot of anger, but it is like, we're going to get in there and we're going to change it.
Right. You know? I just don't know that it's necessarily a pro-liberty change that he advocates.
Of course not. He's a fascist.
Yeah.
Right. So then any movement that he talks about is really just progressivism in a different form.
Sure.
You know, so there isn't... The government has a self-interest in sustaining itself, obviously. Like, no government ever collapses on its own unless they do it with their monetarily, but or overextension of wars and that type of thing. But what we're looking at is a government that isn't... They still probably use Microsoft 95.
Windows 3.1.
Right.
Oh, if you've ever read about the chief technology officer of the White House and how tough it has been for the White House to upgrade to new technologies under the Obama administration. I mean, they're using Windows XP in a Microsoft 10 world. But I don't want to get us too far off on the rants. But yeah, we have a situation where it is easier to tell the stories. We don't need licenses as much.
They're
as
counterproductive,
did. Right?
They basically act as protectionism. Really, it's skill and trade protectionism in a world where
barriers to entry.
Yeah, where there's 5-star ratings for everything you can imagine.
So much of what the government does, and you talk about what Trump's doing. You know, he's not trying. What they're wanting to do is change masters. You know, I want to be in charge. Any government law or regulation that gives one person an advantage over another one, and that's what licensing is. We were talking on the way out here about a bust in Newcastle for selling Xanax. Something that you can go down to the store and buy. If you can buy it with approval, you can't buy it without approval. That is a license that gives one group an advantage over the other. You know, whether or not you agree with it or not, it's
a giveaway to the corporations and creates an incentive to donate to the politicians that promise it.
It definitely does. And tell me a law that doesn't favor one over the other. I mean, there's a few of them out there, but not very many. So this is what we need to work on cutting down. And I've said that many times. You know, the Republicans and Democrats are both jockeying for position, jockeying for more power. As a libertarian, I run as a matter of self-defense. That's what got me involved, not because I wanted to get the government to work for me. I wanted the government to leave me alone, and I want the government to leave other people alone. But I've always been in the belief that if you want the government to regulate your marriage, you can go get a marriage license. If you want the government to handle your retirement, give them your money and let them, you know, let
see what's
them handle
there at
your
the
retirement.
End.
Yeah. You just don't have the right to force me to do it. You don't have the right to force me to fund it. Once we get beyond the force and fraud protection portion of the government, then you don't have any right to make me participate or fund that section. And that's just the way that I've kind of looked at it. It's why I run for office. That's that point over there where we want to be, just this side of private roads, you know, that's where I'd like to be.
Yeah, I mean, how
my roads.
My roads.
So America. I want to talk a little bit about being a candidate in the Libertarian Party, because it is a different experience. If you're used to watching what you see in the presidential campaigns, it's much different. Running for office is not the West Wing, that's for sure.
Don't watch Bullworth or The West Wing and then go become a Libertarian candidate and think that's your new life.
But it's the same in Republican and Democratic campaigns. You'll have paid professional campaign staff for a congressional, a Senate, or gubernatorial campaign, but you're not going to really get any paid staff for any full-time campaigning in a House race, a Senate race for your local state. Definitely not at the county level. You might for a major metropolitan mayor's race. But, you know, it really is every Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, Independent, Green Party, whatever else may be out there, Constitution Party, if that still exists, are really powered by volunteers and people donating directly to those campaigns, and they're powered by you if you're listening. So it is a different animal. And you've run at various levels as a Libertarian. What are some of the hardest? What are the hardest parts about running as a Libertarian third party candidate?
One of the toughest things I face is when we run in a large race. When I ran for 6th district,
U.S. Congress.
Yeah, in U.S. Congress, the 6th district rep. That was 19 counties. Well, you get Libertarian connections and a Libertarian budget and try to spread it over 19 counties,
right.
It's tough.
A dollar in each.
Yeah.
Yeah.
it can be bad. And I would have to say in Wayne County, In Henry County, we've been treated pretty well because we're known there. I have a monthly column that goes out in several newspapers. It's called A Libertarian Perspective. I think that's been instrumental in building, you know, some of our support in that area. I hope so, anyway, that it's worked out that way. Once you get beyond that area where they know your name, events go on you don't know about. Right. Nobody, you know, the Libertarian Party in Indiana is organized in how many counties?
Probably 30? About a third of them. We probably have active county organizations about 35 of the 92 counties, somewhere in there.
And
it's really close.
We're in
close
the top
estimate.
Five of strongest yeah. states in the party. Yeah.
But it's tough to get out and meet people, you know, when they don't know you and they've not heard your name. A lot of people have heard, and this is something I've been involved since 2000, the year 2000. People had never heard the word libertarian back then. That's different now. There's a lot of people know what, and a lot of people have misconceptions about what libertarian is, but at least they've heard the name. They're willing to listen a little bit. So that's one of the good things about it. It's still an uphill battle. We know that.
Well, coming from, you know, Rex's same part of the state, you know, Rex lives about 15 miles east of me, and he's created a libertarian brand in my part of the state that I don't think that a lot of other areas have. If I say that I'm a libertarian, Rex has already plowed that ground and planted the seed to where people know what a libertarian is and says, oh, yeah, you're like Rex Bell. They get that. So, Rex was this goofy guy on the billboards that I saw driving to work, you know, in 2004, 2005. I joined the Libertarian Party in 2000, and man, I've lost track now, 2010, 10. I want to say. Yeah. And at 2012, I was a candidate. In 2014, I was a candidate. And I had incredible success, you know, getting 27% of the vote in a state house race. And it was so much of that was due to Rex's success and the things he had done and, you know, him continuing to run candidates. And he laid a foundation for us that, you know.
What is it that Rex has done that has achieved that?
Rex has been a stable voice. When the local newspaper says, hey, I need to get the libertarian perspective, they'll call Rex. You know, he's run this column for month after month after month to where people just know and realize that's, you know, that they look for Rex's column. And he's, you know, he's a local folk writer, essentially. And he's always got an opinion that people see and know and respect. You know, and it's made it so much easier for the local libertarians. We've gotten people elected every cycle I've been around. We've won some races, which is an impressive thing. And for
with hardly any
budgets, exactly. You know, I think my first race when I pulled in a little over a quarter of the vote, I spent, you know, I think we had a $3,500 budget all in, and that was counting we had billboards. That was kind of cool. The Wayne County Party and Rex and the work they had done, they had a little bit more money, a lot more than we did in comparison, but they teamed up and helped us out with some billboards, and, you know, it was very helpful for our cause. But, you know, as a libertarian candidate, the biggest thing that the party provides you is they provide you ballot access, you know, where I don't have to go out and ask for a bunch of signatures to get on the ballot in Indiana. The libertarian parties continue to maintain ballot access, and as a candidate, it's on you. You know, you're the one responsible for finding your volunteers. You're your organization. The Libertarian Party in itself provides a general framework and a platform, and maybe a little bit of support and ballot access. That's the biggest thing. You know, you are responsible for your campaign. It's kind of an individual thing,
as it should be.
Exactly.
Libertarian, right?
Exactly. And then the hopes for the Libertarian Party is, you know, once you run, then you're going to attract your friends and volunteers, and then you turn them back into libertarians, and then the next cycle that comes along, it continues to build. So the first time or two Rex ran, I'm sure the numbers weren't that great, but by the time I came along, 7 years after he started, or 10 years after he started, there were elected libertarians, and there was a currency, and, you know, every cycle we've gone, we've built and built and built to the point where Rex has won precincts. In that U.S. Congress race 3 years ago, Rex flat out won. He beat the Democrat. He beat the Republican. You know, Luke Messer is the number four Republican in the U.S. Congress right now. Rex beat him. you know, not statewide, not through 19 counties, but in a few places, they, you know, at the end of the night, they pulled the ticket, and Rex Bell was at the top of that thing. That's pretty cool.
And that's how you start to build a party. And in this instant gratification world full of instant gratification millennials, party building is hard, and it takes a long time, and it doesn't jive with what most people want. They want to be winners. And it's not that libertarians aren't winners. It's just that it just takes longer to try and... I mean, it has to feel like a victory, Rex, when you go out there and people know what a libertarian is, when that wasn't the case 5, 8, 7, 6 years ago. Whatever.
This is something that I've said before. This is a process. It's not an event. You know, it takes a while, right. And we've been working on it. And I first ran for office in 2002, ran for county council, and Jefferson Township has 3 precincts, and that year I think I won 2 precincts that year. And I was sitting over in Indianapolis at the after-election party, and Phil Miller, who was from Greenfield, and he was a member of the Greenfield City Council, elected as a libertarian there.
Right.
And he sat down by me, and he said, Rex, there's only 2 people in this room that have ever won a precinct as a libertarian. You and me.
Yeah.
And I thought, really? You know, this is tougher than I thought it was going to be, man. I didn't realize. Since then, you know, since I've been involved with the Libertarian Party in Wayne County, we have won 8 elections, won 6 precincts. Sometimes I won 6 precincts in Wayne County and 2 in Henry County. So it's something that's growing. You know, are we where we want to be? Not necessarily.
Right.
But we're heading over towards those private roads over there. We're getting closer to
it. So what do you say to people, I'm not going to vote for you because you can't win?
I've told people many times, if everybody that told me we'd vote for you except you can't win, if everybody that told me that would have voted for me, I'd be over in Indianapolis right now.
Making it great again.
It's just the way it works.
It is
people
true.
Think
yeah.
they're betting on a horse race. You know, they say, I want to pick a winner. That's not what it's about, folks. It's about voting for what you want.
And voting what you believe in.
Well, if you vote for your policies, when those policies start showing up in the ballot box, even if you only get 20% of the vote or 25% of the vote, and you finish as close second or a narrow third, you've affected the policy of the race.
I definitely think that. I've said this before. When I run for office, there's 3 things that can happen. That I could win the race, and you get a bully pulpit that way. Even though you're one person, you can say, look what happened. I won the race. This is something people are genuinely concerned about. We need to start addressing this. Second thing can happen, you can lose, but you get enough votes that, as Jeremiah says, you start affecting the other people that are up there. They're looking at this, say, wait a minute, I don't want to give up 20% to these people. We need to start looking at how we spend tax money. We need to start looking at how we're doing these pensions, the state pensions, money that we're taking from people. There's different things we need to address. We need to realize that putting consenting adults in jail for smoking a plant is wrong. We need to start thinking about that. So that's the second thing that can happen. And I said the third thing is maybe I'll lose and it won't have any effect at all, but at least I can tell my grandkids I did the best I could. And I think that's what we need to do. We need to be able to look at our neighbors, look at our family, look at our kids and say, this is important. We need to work on it.
Would you say that your races and your work over the last 16 years has had no effect at all?
No, I don't think so. You know, I think a lot of, I can't remember what came up the other day that I said, you know, that was a libertarian position that's gone mainstream now that people are talking about. I've had drug warriors tell me, well, you know, really, you know, we shouldn't be putting people in jail for marijuana. Yeah. It's not, they're not all the way. They're not where they should be, but they've moved in that direction. You know, I talk to people every day that when I bring up the roads, and they say, you know, this, we got to do something about these roads. I say, well, how about we spend the tax money on the roads? The road use money, let's spend it on the roads. Excellent idea. Everybody thinks it's a great idea. Well, the state is starting to do that now. They've pulled a lot of the money that they were spending on other things and throwing it back into the roads. They're not all the way where they should be.
Sure.
But over the last 3 years, the policy's been affected, and they've pushed it.
Not because they thought it was a good idea, but because somebody else thought it was a good idea.
The other thing is that you have close contact with people who go on to govern, even if you don't win. And, you know, Mike Pence, to most people, the governor of Indiana, seems like an untouchable figure, a person you will never reach or have a conversation with. And a lot of people won't. But when you run against these people, when you run against a congressman, you run against a town councilman, you get time in the debates to really get to talk to them. You know, and Rupert had put out all of his policy positions in early March, April, and one of them was putting less emphasis on college education and giving students more access to vocational information, because in an effort to get everybody to go to college to spend money, they had really killed off a lot of vocational education in Indiana. And Rupert works with kids that need vocational education. And Mike Pence must have tested it, because he stole it and put it in his very next commercial, round of commercials, played really well. And when he became governor, he signed vocational educational reform as one of his first acts. You know, I've seen at every level with the hundreds of candidates that I've worked with, I've seen candidates say, well, that guy stole my idea when he got elected. It's, well, yeah, that's sort of the point. Like, put your hubris aside and focus on the good that you can do. And so that's why I think it's really important that, you know, part of what Rex's success as a party leader and a candidate has been is that he is not perceived as a far-out anarchist who is a destination libertarian who says, no, all roads should be private. That's not what he's arguing.
When I'm elected, there'll be no more police or courts.
Right. What Rex is arguing...
Put his wife out of a job.
Yeah.
...is here's the problem. Now, ultimately, here's where I'd like to be, but here's the problem that faces us. Here's the most libertarian solution at this moment.
That's achievable.
And let's move that direction. And the people around him accept that and start to listen and go, okay, this guy makes sense. But when you just get up and you spout, you know, the Constitution, the Constitution, the Constitution, you know, I'm not, you know, we're not, we need to kill all cops. it's like, it's just like nobody listens to you anymore because you're not reasonable. And I think you can really, even in a city, but especially in small town America, you're going to get a lot of time around Tom Saunders, the guy that you ran against. And he's going to go to Indiana's General Assembly, and he's got 10 bills a year that he can file. And if your opponent has a lot of respect for you, I've seen this, you know, James Neese, the most unlikely of all libertarian candidates to influence a competitor, worked really closely with Justin Moed after he got elected, because Justin spent time with James. And listen, most of our listeners don't like James. I get letters about how much they think he's a nut job.
Did he help him online dating, or how did that?
I don't know. But Justin Moed would really go back to James and pick his brain about decisions, because he had found James to be somebody that was worthwhile of conversation, knowledgeable about the issues, someone with out of the box thinking, that's for sure. And he became sort of an advisor to a Democratic state legislator. And you can really make a difference. No, you're not going to win probably as a libertarian or a third-party candidate. I hate to say this in the presence of Rex, but the better chances of winning are at the township level, the county level, the town level. The lower the race, the more likely it is that you can win, because you have less people to touch.
And your brand is more effective.
Exactly,
you know,
right.
Your brand has its biggest strength the closer people you are in your community.
And you have to give it a lot of time and a lot of cycles and put off the charges that you're just a perennial candidate and you just run for everything, blah, blah, blah. But a lot of what Rex has done that has been effective is he's marketing himself, he's marketing his message, he's marketing the Libertarian Party, and by having his name on the ballot, other libertarians, one of the best marketing tools for us is that when you go to the ballot box, you see another person that lives near you that has an L next to their name. And you go, holy crap, there's a Libertarian Party here? And it may just be that one guy, but then if you realize there's another one, you become two, a party of two. And Rex started as a party of one, and he has built it up to the point where he's winning precincts because he hasn't just made it all about him, made it all about instant gratification, made it all about, you know, it's not romanticizing the process, just realizing that, listen, it's going to be fun to get to go out and talk to my neighbors. It's going to be fun to go to the county fair and have a booth and talk to a lot of people. And it's going to be fun to go participate in a debate. You know, so many candidates I've seen over the years, the fun for them is on election night when they win and the media comes up and they're libertarian stars. And it is all about their ego. It's not about what it actually was about. You know, it's the thing in our lives. It's all about the destination. We never enjoy the journey, Greg.
It's where it's, you know, when we talk about where we want to be, and I've said many times, you can accomplish about anything you want to accomplish if you're willing to let somebody else take credit for it.
Right.
So, you know, when we run for office and, you know, the effect that we have, you know, I think is what we should be working towards. You say that, you know, libertarians can't win or probably won't win. Anything's on any given day, anything's possible.
You never know what Richard Murdoch might say.
That's right. It could happen.
Feel free to argue with me,
Rex. If it's God's will, you can win.
Yeah. I'm not going to argue that we definitely are going to elect a libertarian governor this year. I'm just saying that on any given day, anything can happen. You look at Minnesota.
Jesse Ventura
in Minnesota. It can happen.
Donald Trump right
if
now.
I was,
you
yeah,
sleep in the same bed literally. As somebody who didn't expect to win and
yes,
win.
Yes. When she found out that she won, the first thing she did was demand a recount. So you know, this is something that I don't want to completely throw cold water on the fact that someday libertarians are going to win. You know, between the ideas that we have, the economic reality that's approaching, whether people like it or not, either libertarians are going to win or we're going to have to figure out how we're going to land after the fall. That's
right.
Basically what it amounts to.
You just better start buying Sean Hannity's food insurance.
Yeah, all sorts of things like this. But, you know, it's something that I don't want to be so depressing that I want to be a realist and an optimist.
Yeah, and you can.
I know it's going to. I'm an old man, you know. I'm probably not going to see it. But sometime in my lifetime or my kid's lifetime, there's going to be a lot of elected libertarians. There has to be.
What's interesting to me, and have you ever, I'm sure everybody here has seen the movie A Beautiful Mind, right? With Russell Crowe.
Every time I close my eyes.
Oh, my God.
I see a beautiful mind.
Russell Crowe plays the MIT former professor and mathematician John Nash. And in it, his big discovery and contribution to our world today was that Adam Smith wasn't correct. It's not everybody pursuing the same thing where everyone benefits the most. It's where each person pursues what's best for them. And for a lot of times, that's what it feels like as the libertarian is you're running for governor. You have every intent to run for governor. The reality is, though, you have consistently been on ballots, run over and over, lived authentically, and created a brand by being the authentic libertarian. In doing so, what's best for you is continuing to influence that brand, and in time, that materializes into the electoral success. Mm-hmm. Or somebody might be able to, you know, your legacy will be the platform you provided them.
Well, we hope that we're having some effect. You know, we've had multiple candidates. When Chris talks about run candidates, in 2004, I think, the Libertarian Party had more candidates in Wayne County than the Democratic Party had. That's fallen off a little bit because not everybody enjoys getting beat up like I do. I keep coming back, you know. But it's one of those things you have to be dedicated and you have to keep trying. And we still run candidates. It was one of those flurries out of the gate, you know, and we've got a lot of people enthused about it. A lot of them didn't stick with it. I wish they would have because, you know, the vote totals are increasing. You know, if we'd have kept everybody running that long, we'd a good possibility we would have had more elected by now.
Yeah.
It's hard to get people that aren't committed libertarians to run for office. You might get them to run once, mm-hmm. And then they say,
they have delusions
happened?
Of grandeur.
Oh, definitely. You know?
Yeah, or leave a big party and come seek it in a smaller one, they're going to change America.
And that's something when Jeremiah mentioned ballot access, that's something that, you know, I don't want to be an alarmist, but we have to be careful because with that ballot access, you know, people come in and say, man, I can get on this ballot. Yeah, I'm a libertarian.
Yeah, there's an asset to exploit now.
That's why it's important that we maintain our core values. And I think, and you know, I mentioned before, I try to be a pragmatic libertarian. But also there's a core that needs to remain pure.
Yeah.
And I hope that we can do that.
Yeah. It's always a balance.
You're a purist. You hate...
Oh, it's hilarious to be the establishment now. So, it's hilarious.
Oh, boy.
It's so funny.
I've always thought that you were the libertarian Jeb Bush, Chris. You know, it just never occurred to me that other people thought that way.
We'll get into the establishment argument.
Please clap for Chris.
At some other, not in the presence of Rex, because I want to cuss. And I want to talk about the establishment and what a bunch of hooey all that is.
Yeah.
I will make the case that Jeb Bush is actually a conservative. Not somebody I would vote for. He's a warmongering loser. He's very low energy. But
he's the most conservative dresser of anyone running for the Republican
absolutely.
Ticket.
Absolutely. But, yeah.
He's conservative's hair. His brother has lost his hair, and he's conserved his hair. Jeb's hanging on.
It's
no, balding.
No offense, Rex. He's really going bald.
Did he go all the way?
No,
I didn't see pictures.
It's just the front center.
He's about halfway, Rex.
It's tough.
Take that out. About half of that.
Yeah.
So the front half is going.
And Rex rides in too many convertibles, I think, or the back of too many pickup trucks, and it all blows off.
People don't understand the problem. We have no idea to where to stop washing our face at. You know, start washing, it just go up and up and up.
So, like, with your campaign upcoming, like, assuming everything goes well and you are the Libertarian candidate for governor in Indiana, what are the issues you plan to... Is it something where you're going to target Greg and Pence when you have an audience to really drive home or score political points to appeal? Or are you more committed to, this is what libertarians believe and I believe. I may not win, and I'm not going to take cheap shots because I don't think maybe the few extra votes I win right now are going to materialize down the line. So are you kind of that education or the political point? Yeah, opportunistic messaging person.
You can go back and look at my past campaigns, and I have campaigned on what we think we should do. You know, I have people saying to me, what are Pence's issues? What are Greg's issues going to be in this campaign? I don't care. This is something where we need to move what we think is important. So that's what I'm going to plan on doing. If it contradicts something that they're wanting to push, then that's fine.
Good.
That's just a natural flow of things. But I'm not going to go out and go after changes that they've made in their mind or dumb decisions that they've made. Lord knows there's been enough of them.
There we go. That's what I like to hear.
Mike Pence has a record and he can't defend it. John Gregg has a record and he's changed everything in the last 3 years.
It looks just like Mike Pence's.
Rex is still the one that's conservative or consistent.
I don't know where Gregg is going to be come election time.
Neither does he.
No. You know, it depends on where he needs to be. I see that too often. You know, people making the change, and that's one thing that I've said before. One thing that attracted me to libertarianism is we're consistent in our beliefs because we're right.
It's not on a house of sand.
No, we're not chasing after votes, and it shows up. You know, it showed up when we were getting 3%, but we maintain, and when we get up to 30%, or when we win elections. The fact that we can win and stay true to our values, I think, is the most important thing. I don't think if we go chasing after it and we're just like the Republicans and Democrats, then what's the point?
What was worth the hard work all for?
Yeah, you know, this is where I'm at on the thing. And like I said, I do run for self-defense, not just self-defense, I guess self-defense for people.
Yeah.
to get the government off of our back, to get the government to leave us alone. I'm not looking to get control of somebody else. I'm trying to stop the government's control over us. And I hope that resonates with people. I think it's resonated more every election. And I've run in some big races where the vote totals have dropped down. You know, when we get into Wayne County and we're getting 30%, 34%, that type of thing, you know, over 20% in a three-way race, you know, I feel real good, real confident that we're gaining ground. Then when we get into the 19-county race and you get up get down to Switzerland County and people say, who is that? That, you know, we have not had any contact with them. And that's one thing I hope my campaign is able to put together this year, if I do get the nomination, that we can get libertarians involved around the state reaching out to people with our writing and our columns and that sort of thing, get it into some papers, get it on the websites.
Everybody needs some primer because you get limited time.
Yes.
And it's you don't want to spend that time, this is what a libertarian is.
Yeah.
And then give them an education and their attention span's gone.
And you know, I think with if we can hopefully keep it entertaining, which is something that I've tried to do over the years, we've converted a few people, and we hope to convert a few more this year.
The memes will help with the entertainment, right?
Memes are going to be great.
I think it was off air, right? You were talking about Greg did a couple memes, and you're like, that first one, this is great. I like this. That really speaks to me. Then the second one was sort of an open call, like, hey, make your own meme. And then you saw James Neese start commenting, and you're like, oh, no.
That was totally like, so I just provided a template for Rex's people to, I didn't realize James Neese was in that conversation, and I love James.
It's a high risk world.
And the great thing about James is he's a messaging, and he creates firestorms everywhere he goes.
Yes, he does.
So he's very good at in being incendiary, and everyone has a distinct opinion on James Neese.
Yep.
And so if you can harness that correctly, you have a ton to gain. And if it ever comes off the rails, you'll never run again.
It'll never work.
Okay. Well. No.
So you do have an opponent, I'm not going to talk about the opponent because I don't. Rex is the right choice. what is the process? And it's different for every state, but I think most people have an awareness. They see in the media that you go to vote on primary day, and when I was executive director of the Libertarian Party of Indiana, I would constantly get calls, or we'll get Facebook posts, and you know, Greg is now getting them because he's attached to the libertarians. Sorry.
I've always been a libertarian. It's nice to not be called a scumbag Republican all the time.
Yeah, I know. And so now I get messages like, hey, I went to vote in the primary, and you guys weren't on the ballot. I don't know what's going on. How do I help pick our candidates? And as we talked about in the last, I think you heard a little bit about the process in the last episode. But talk about how libertarians choose. We don't go and participate in public primaries that is closed party business paid for by the taxpayers, Republicans. How do we pick our candidates?
We do it the proper way. It is party business, private business, so the party picks the candidates at convention, which is what everybody should do. You know, we have a formula, the number of libertarians in the county, number of votes.
For Secretary of State, which is our ballot access race.
Is there three or four?
I think that's it. Those two factors, those get you each individual county a delegation, and then each county has a convention, and they will nominate their local candidates. So, you know, they're the ones that get to decide who's running for your county commissioner or your mayor or whatnot. Depending upon what cycle it is, but then they will also choose their delegates out of their allocation. So, you know, you may have four or five delegates at a rural county, and then those four or five are selected by the locals, and then they get to go to the state convention and do business there, which includes the race for governor this year.
And that's the organized counties. If there are counties that are unorganized and the Libertarian Party is not organized in those counties, and they have a local candidate, the state
will
nominates
handle
them
that
at that time. But that's basically what it amounts to. So right now we're reaching out to libertarians across the state, trying to garner enough support that we can get the nomination at the convention in April.
Right now what your campaign is about is about getting delegates going around to different local conventions and meeting with the people that will be the voters at the state convention. And then once you get past that, then you turn your focus into more of a general election candidate.
If I don't get the nomination at the state convention, it's
cart before the horse.
Yeah, doesn't matter after that. What we're trying to do is first things first, and get the Libertarian nomination.
If you're in Indiana, if you're an Indiana listener, ours is April 23rd. I know I will be there. I'm sure Greg and I know Jeremiah and I know Rex will be there. So if you want to come by and say hi, I think it's here in Indianapolis. I don't know exactly where it's at.
It's the Wyndham Hotel over on the west side.
You can pay $10 and get a picture with Chris Spangle and Greg Lentz.
$15 and I'll sign it.
Oh, $15 for a signed picture?
Well,
they have expenses here. I haven't heard the plug yet, but I know that they have high expenses
here. It's coming.
There we go.
So
you should just sell like the equivalent of papal blessings as Dear Leader.
I'm thinking about
libertarian afterlife guarantee.
I'm thinking about getting into this Pope business because then I can start declaring who is and who is not a Christian, who is not a libertarian.
Well, you've been doing that for years.
Oh yeah, that's true.
When are you building the walls outside of your complex here, Dear Leader?
I've built them around my heart, Jeremiah. So we are talking to Rex Bell. Rex Bell is running for governor in Indiana, longtime Libertarian Party member. Greg, you're sort of new to the Libertarian Party. What are some of the common misconceptions that you might have about the Libertarian Party? I haven't really expressed this to anyone, but I've been thinking it. So I should probably tell my co-host, and I should probably say it out loud. But it's kind of the first in a series of episodes that we're going to do talking about the Libertarian Party. So I wanted to give you all the candidate's perspective of what it's like to run and be a successful Libertarian Party candidate. We're going to talk a little bit about the National Libertarian Party and the problems that go on there, and we're going to talk to a few people who are going to run for national office and the Libertarian Party and how they plan to fix it.
This is a big week in the National Libertarian Party. They've announced that there's going to be a national debate for president
On Fox Business, hosted by John Stossel. It will have Austin Peterson, John McAfee, and Gary Johnson. I know
the body's not going to be in it.
No, I don't think he's actually going to run.
There'd be two elected governors.
No, there'd be two elected governors.
And the fact that John Stossel has a television show is testament to what libertarianism has become.
Kennedy, too. Gary Johnson's my choice, although I know Austin Peterson, and I like Austin Peterson an awful lot. I just think Gary Johnson did a fantastic job running last time and brought a lot to the race, and hopefully he can complete his lawsuit to get into the main debates at the end of the year too. But yeah, it's exciting that Fox Business is going to legitimize the Libertarian Party process of nominating candidates. You go to the convention in Orlando in May, Memorial Day weekend. You want to go to, I know it's the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500. So,
oh, no way.
Yeah, so Jer and I will be here.
Some of us will not be attending the National Libertarian Convention because we have to see if Roger Penske or Chip Ganassi can win the Indy 500.
Right. So, but for those of you who are not race nerds like Jer and I, then you can go to beautiful, beautiful, sunny Orlando. I don't know what happened there.
And turned into Derek Daly.
Yeah, you can vote for the national chair. You can vote for the body that governs the Libertarian National Committee, president, and meet an awful lot of awesome libertarians. A lot of interesting libertarians, too. So what are some other things that you might have thoughts on the Libertarian Party? Ask a question or do something.
We don't know.
We'll take your question now, Greg.
Greg Lenz, Plainfield, go.
No, I mean, I have got to, over the last 4 years, being when Chris invited me on and I never left, it's been a great, I was always a, I was always a libertarian in my mind, and then I would get drawn and sucked into the political, GOP, Rush Limbaugh, Republicanism. And then, as I've been on here, it's amazing, like, to watch the party grow as an outsider. And Chris did a lot of the work, too, once there was the money for executive director. And I think there still is, they're working on it.
Yeah, that's up to the State Central Committee and the internal political stuff inside the it's right now. I don't think there's an executive director. There's a couple other paid positions in the party, but not an executive director. We haven't had one. Chris is irreplaceable. Just can't replace the dear leader.
I noticed that.
Well, I mean, you're incredibly well organized. You know, you're a young party because when you look at it, the GOP and Democrats have such a head start on you guys. You know, and the fact that you've been around since 78 was the
1973,
year
I think. Oh, 73 is the best I can. What I'm told, it predates me. It doesn't go all the way back to slavery like the other parties do, but you know, it does predate me.
Oh, all right, not touching that. But no, the competence of the people involved. You know, Rex is someone I met briefly at the 2012 convention, and that was when at first I had all the preconceived notions about what a third party was. And I'd only been exposed to some very incendiary fringe people that were great for the podcast, but weren't necessarily great for my wanting to be involved in the party. And I've come to know Jeremiah and become friends with him. And then Rex, watched him until, you know, more recently being involved. And it is some of the most competent, politically minded people I've seen. There isn't this huge anarchist wing. You know, and granted, there probably wouldn't be when it's a political organization, but the people that you meet are so smart and so grounded in their philosophical beliefs that compared to what you get in the Republican race or in the Democrat race, whose parties barely have a platform that's coherent, it's so nice and refreshing to know, oh, this is what I'll actually get. It's a certainty that, you know, when electoral success has happened and they're going to and they're starting to, it's to know how you're going to govern before you go in. And there's no worrying all of a sudden you're going to want to build a wall against Michigan and deport anyone that points out where they live.
Those Wolverines are dangerous, and they can't be allowed over our border.
Right. Higher. Higher.
And then I don't have a ton of experience with the national level. I only hear from Chris and then conversations at Liberty and Chill and those types of things. And I think Rex is – what appeals to me about Rex, and while I'll be supporting him, you know, especially I think it's a done deal. He's going to be the candidate, and he's going to be my guy for the state of Indiana, he can be the philosophical libertarian, and he still wants to affect political change and build small successes that snowball. And there's never an issue with his authenticity. He's such a personal brand. No one ever says that you're a compromiser or you're a lino, if you will, a libertarian in name only.
How do you that was a question I was going to ask earlier, and Greg helped kind of jog this question out of me. How do you balance your pragmatism with your purity? I mean, how do you find that balance as a candidate? How do you say, okay, listen, here's where I want to go, but here's where we are? I mean, how do you kind of blend that all together to be a coherent individual and a candidate?
Well, you know, I've said before, you know, where we want to be, where we are, like you just mentioned there. And I've said any time I was running for a state rep office or even at the U.S. reps, when a bill comes up that lessens government, if there's a bill comes forward that reduces the cost or intrusion of government, I will support that bill. If a better bill comes along that reduces it even more, I'll support that bill. I'll never support any bill that increases the cost or intrusiveness of government. And I think if we worked in that direction, you know, we can stand here and holler, this is what we want, mm-hmm. and that's fine. But what would you accept? Would you accept a little less government while we were working towards that? Yes, I would. Would you accept a little more government while you were working towards that? No, I will not. You know, I would never accept that. You know, we've got some different types of taxes that people talk about. Is taxation theft? Of course it is. Is there a possibility that we could get some taxes that were less intrusive, that gave you more choice? Yes, there is. If we could have road use taxes are basically a user's fee. That's what we can do as far as that goes. Could we do away with property taxes so that you actually own your property? Yes, we can. That's something we could do. Could we replace it with sales tax and user fees? Is that still theft? Yes, it is. But you have some control over that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get into a situation like we are with property taxes now, where the government has a pre-existing claim to your property.
Title.
No matter what. And I think property taxes are the most unfair taxes. I think income tax is unfair. How can you say that the government has prior claim? But when I get up to go to work of a morning, the government has already said, I want this percentage of your wages. If you don't go to work, I'm not going to take it. But if you do work, you owe us that. That's wrong, you know. So, yeah, I'll agree that the sales tax is bad, but it's not as bad as the others, and it's something we could reduce. As we reduce government spending and reduce government intrusion, we could lower the sales tax. Can we ever get back to the founding fathers'
constrained republic?
Yeah, could we ever get back to that? I don't know, but we can work towards it, and that's what I'd like to do. And you talked about the crazy people that you knew in the party.
Well, no, and there aren't those in the party. That's the funny part, is those people are never party members.
They're fringe small L's.
Yeah, they're the black and yellow libertarians that feel... I brandish libertarians actually sometimes more than Chris, but those people, I brandish anarchists. I don't go after Libertarian Party members.
You treat libertarians like I treat Republicans.
Yeah. Well, only anarchists, and it's because I see a shared mentality between liberals and the anarchist crowd because they feel victims.
Yeah.
Everybody that has the government thrust upon them, they lose a personal freedom. That's just the way it is. I don't think armed marches in Washington are an effective means to prevent the government for having force in my life. I think, yes, it stinks that sometimes the majority decides how you live, but it's the nature of the beast. We have to change their mind.
You know, Rex legislatively has libertarian agenda, but he's also a bit of a protester, too. One of the first times I met Rex, I saw his pickup truck, and Rex is a contractor, so he's always driving a pickup truck around, and... the back of his truck said something about newspaper deliveries, Rex, and I wondered if maybe you could share that story, because I said, Rex, you're running for all these offices, you're a contractor, and you're a newspaper delivery guy too. What is up with that?
Well, the when the legislature passed the last seatbelt law, they carved out an exemption for people that deliver newspapers. So. And I kept that law, and I don't remember the statute number now, but I had a clipping of it, what this was, and persons who deliver newspapers were exempt from the seatbelt law. So I had a stack of Libertarian Perspective newspapers on my front seat. I drove around for, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years, begging somebody to stop me. They never did. Finally, in Hagerstown one day, a county deputy, he was 12 or 13 years old, I believe, stopped and gave me a ticket. And I said, well, are you aware of this law? And he went, long story short, no, he didn't agree with that. He thought it applied to somebody else. I took it to court, made 3 appearances at the court courthouse in Richmond, and it was decided that law meant if I had been closer to where I was dropping the newspaper off, since I wasn't close enough, I was on my way to Economy to deliver a newspaper at the time, and which is 8 miles up the road, and the judge told me that I wasn't close enough for that to be in effect. Well, I read the law. Again, it didn't say anything
about distance.
That. No. Right. It was just a matter of
his interest.
Yeah.
He legislated
the law.
Yeah, he legislated from the bench.
Because I read it, and I know he read it, and I know the prosecutor read it, and nobody could read that into the law. But it was a matter of we're in control, and you better know we're in control.
Where is Justice Scalia when you need him?
Freedom is not always free. Sometimes it costs $25. And I still, occasionally, if I'm on the interstate, I normally put on my seatbelt. If I'm driving around Hagerstown, I don't put on my seatbelt.
Now, out of that was spawned a T-shirt. Is that
correct? Yes. I have a Libertarian Party of Wayne County had some T-shirts made up that have a big stripe running down across them. It looks like a seatbelt, a big black stripe across here. We've had a lot of fun with that too. But
it should be fun. It doesn't have to be antagonistic. You can have fun mocking. Yeah. And that's the way you get your foot in the door and changing someone's mind.
Yeah, we get charged with, because of the memes and stuff, that, oh, you're not serious and you're embarrassing the Libertarian Party. It's like, you know what? It's not that important.
No.
Not the politics. Basically, what you have to understand in this day and age anymore, politics is very serious. You go back and listen to episode 91 and Rachel's story, government is serious business, and it does cost people's lives. But at the same time, it's entertainment.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a show about to start in a half an hour between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, and it's a show. It doesn't matter what they say. All that matters is how they say it and who's the most entertaining. And that's who will get your vote.
Well, in this new era we live in, it's about winning hearts and minds. And you win that through memes and silly T-shirts and winning arguments and the battle of ideas. It's not always about legislation and code. It's about finding a way to break down an argument into something simple and digestible and that wins people over to your side.
We are so fortunate to have listeners that want us to talk long form.
Yeah.
And respond to what we do here in the way that we want to do it, and it's great. But we post the episode, or if Greg writes something and spends 2 hours writing a piece and then posts it to the website, or if we post this to the website and then post it to Facebook, it will get 200 people will see it. It'll get a share, and that'll probably be one of us. It'll get like 15 likes at most. We put up a meme that took some nerd 30 seconds to make, and he put it up on Reddit, and we hijacked it. It'll get,
10,000
people will see it. It'll, it'll be 200 shares, and it stinks. It's honestly, as a content creator professionally and as a hobby, it stinks that people want memes and they want to be entertained and informed at the same time. Instead of just dry, boring talk, but hey, that's all right.
It's a free market at work. We'll
give you the memes. You want the memes? We got them right for you.
We'll give you little Jibby.
Yep. And so people, people want to criticize us for that, but at the same time, I guarantee, there's four times more people that will listen to this podcast than will be in Orlando at the national convention. So. And it's the sad truth, but it's the honest
it's
truth.
It's the way it is, and it's a thing that, Sherry Connell Charlotte
right.
Told me one time that no souls were saved after 20 minutes.
Right.
And I believe that. That's, that goes to when you're sitting in church. If you've got something to say and you can say it without taking a breath, you're going to get more people listen to that than when you talk and when you write. When I write something that's 1,000 words, there's going to be a lot less people hit that than the other day I put something on Facebook about the libertarians being opposed to force, and it was just very simple. Libertarians are opposed to the initiation of force, and Republicans and Democrats depend on it, and they do. That's how they advance their agenda. Well, it got a lot of hits. It got a lot of shares. People will read something that takes
140 characters. Yeah.
But if you sit down like you talk about, I sit down and spend the evening writing a story, and I do have it. If it shows up,
could you not show him little Jebby?
I wasn't sure Rex had seen it, so I pulled up the little Jebby.
He's trying
meme
to talk, and you're showing him little Jebby.
if I post something on my blog, people will not click.
Right.
Go through it. It's like folding the page. It's like reading past the fold. They won't do it anymore. I have better luck if I put something on there where it's right in front of them and they can read it.
Yep.
But it's still not as effective if you can get it across, like you say, 140 characters. I don't know why it is, but you talk about the memes. It's the same thing. People, if they can see it that quick, they like it.
I kind of look at it as it's different tools, you know, in converting someone. The meme exposes a hypocrisy that they hadn't maybe considered and says, well, you know, why do we let the EPA pollute the Colorado River? Yep. Like, thank God for the government. Yep. And then it's, well, okay, I've thought about it. That's been on my mind. And then maybe then they're led into something that helps them. You know, most people just don't spend time digesting their own philosophical political beliefs.
Yep.
And so you have to be there. You can't just feed them memes or else Donald Trump happens.
It's the 21st century political cartoon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, we 1800s, right. We had those, and that's what it is now. It's memes. And everybody's enabled, and everybody can jump on memegenerator.com and make one.
China. And you talk about that, you know, leading into something else. It's like we talked about earlier. It's not an event. It's a process.
Yep.
Get people to start thinking about it. If we can get them to pay attention to one blurb, and then they say, you know, the last three or four blurbs I've seen from here I really like. Maybe there's something else. Maybe I'll read a little farther the next time it comes along. Put the meme in front of a story, whatever, you know.
Right. But I always, like said, yeah. I wrote a kind of damning article of Todd Young, who's trying, well, he was originally going to run for Senate in Indiana as a Republican. And I thought, you know, if I put just a regular picture of Mike Young or Todd Young up, one, no one outside Indiana will care. But I thought, if I make him replicate scumbag Mike Young, you know, and then say, you know, wants to be the Republican senator from Indiana but can't find 500 Republicans to vote for him, then that might get someone to say, oh, I loved that We Are Libertarians thing. That wasn't at all about libertarianism, but what is it? You know, and that's the whole game for us, you know, and it's like what you do. You've ran in a lot of races, just seeing your name over and over. It's like, oh yeah, Libertarian Rex Bell. And then someone asks them, that's who you voted for. And like, what does a libertarian mean? And that person may not know. And then they go to you and read all your posts, and they become maybe not a party member, but an advocate for Rex Bell and Rex Bell Libertarians.
Part of our problem, I think, is our name, too. I mean, we might have to change the We Are Libertarian name to something a little more innocuous to trick people into listening to our political program.
Wall Live.
Yeah, Wall Live, Wall Politics, in outside politics on this week's... Brought to you by WAL.
As long as Tom Woods listens, we're good.
Tom Woods, God bless that man. Tom Cotton, you can go screw yourself.
Wow, yeah. So, he called Apple basically jihadists. That was the equivalent. Like, he called out Apple and said they prefer terrorist lives to American lives.
If there is any company that has the fiscal ability to fight the U.S. government, it's Apple.
No, they don't. Nobody does. That's the beauty.
Until they freeze their bank account.
That's the beauty of an enormous government.
That's true.
All right, we need to wrap up because I need to post this podcast, and then I'm going to a comedy show.
And so, let him give the blanket where you can support Rex, how you can donate to Rex.
So this is at the end, you get to talk about whatever you want. You get to self-promote. You get to talk about something you missed. Or any other issue. It's the floor is yours. We'll let Jeremiah go first so he can show you how it's done. Then we'll go around the table.
All right. Well, thank you for inviting me back, Chris. I was really thinking this was the time I was finally going to get to collect on my pizza, but it didn't happen.
Nope.
So
total libertarian move.
I can look forward to the next opportunity for depression. thrilled to be asked to be back on, Greg. I really do appreciate you reaching out personally again and making it happen. My lifelong friendship with Chris Spangle never seems to turn into invitation. My new friendship with Greg always does.
You get access to me more than anyone else, okay? Except for Emily.
Well, I don't want that kind of access.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. Great save. Signed great reference there. Whatever you and Emily need to do, on and on and on.
Eat oatmeal cream pies and go to comedy shows. That's it. So, Jeremiah, what would you like to talk about?
I yield back the balance of my time.
All right. Rex Bell?
Well, if there are any libertarians in Indiana listening to this right now, I would certainly appreciate your support at the convention in April. I think that we have a great opportunity here to make a lot of advances this year. I think it's important that we stay true to our message, that we put an authentic libertarian at the top of the ticket, and I hope you'll feel that I'm that person. If you do feel that way and you would like to contribute to my campaign, we have a couple different ways. You can go to www.electrexbell.com. That is our website that is still under construction, but through the miracle of modern science, we have a donate button up and running, even if nothing
That's
else
all you really
is.
Care about.
Yeah.
And also on our Facebook page, Rex Bell for Governor. If you'd stop by there and like that, there's also just happens there's a donate button there. I have a lot of stories that I've posted already that we use to explain our positions, our policy positions. Take a look. If you see something you like, well, we would certainly appreciate your support in April. And if things work out good, we'd appreciate your support in November. It's not for us. It's for you, and I hope you realize that.
Greg?
I'll stump for Rex as well. Both within the Libertarian Party, as they hopefully nominate him, I think there isn't anyone you could really more pick, especially for the Indiana. I mean, when I met Rex, it was more I thought he was an authentic Hoosier than a Libertarian.
You were meeting Indiana incarnate.
Right. You know, he is the representative of Indiana.
He
in
is the
living.
Man that Mike Pence and John Gregg aspire to be.
Right. No, literally.
In the messaging.
And that's, that's to me, it's, I think that there's really only one candidate that appreciates. He's lived in Indiana his whole life. He hasn't, decided to go to Washington and be a golden boy or, be a political opportunist like John Gregg and believe everything Mike Pence believes until it's unpopular and then flip.
And you know, his only involvement in the criminal justice system has been a seatbelt ticket, apparently.
Yeah. But, that's why I, it's with Rex, it's he's authentically.
That wouldn't come up.
We flushed that one out.
Oh, you were talking about something. Whoa.
I was just doing oppo research on Rex.
Okay. Sure. But no, he is to me a perfect representative of Indiana and how you live and what you believe, and then that corresponds with libertarianism as well. And being the only candidate that is pro LGBT, that for a lot of millennials that matters, and that should be something that is repeatedly slammed home. That John Gregg's no pillar of LGBT rights. And that you're the only candidate that doesn't want to tell people how to live, which to me is an actual Hoosier trait. Hoosier hospitality goes down to our acceptingness and will tolerate many, many things. And that's what libertarianism is. It's, I believe this, you believe that, we'll coexist, be neighbors. Why do we need the government to be social engineers and planners? And so that's my endorsement for Rex. I think he's the guy, and if you don't vote for him and I find out, you're totally screwed.
Yep.
One last bit that I
you
jumped in there.
You seeded your time,
I seeded
sir.
My time, but then I got what was left
All
of
right,
Greg's.
All right, the floor recognizes you.
All right, wonderful. the people of Indiana are grateful. No, the opportunity Rex has, if he is our candidate in November, is that the Libertarian Party is included in the debates. So statewide, when there is a debate for U.S. Senator, Governor, or something that the Indiana Debate Commission puts on, the Libertarian Party candidate is included, and there is no better person across the state, declared candidate or not, to be the Libertarian candidate, to advance Libertarian ideas than Rex Bell. One of the biggest reasons I came to the Libertarian Party was watching those statewide debates, because I'm a political nerd, and I would watch, and I wasn't a Libertarian yet. I was a scumbag Republican like Greg, but I would watch, and I would agree with Andy Horning. And I would agree with the two or three generations of Libertarian candidates before, Ken Givenend and other folks before, where they were making the points that struck home for me. And there is no person I would rather have on that stage advancing Libertarian ideas than Rex Bell. He's going to continue the tradition of Andy Horning and Rupert and Rebecca Sink Burris of giving legitimate Libertarian answers. He may not know every question that's coming, but every answer he gives is going to be founded in Libertarian principle and thought. And that's going to attract people at the ballot box in November. So now I cede back the balance of my time.
All right. No extensions will be granted. All right. I'm not going to stump for Rex because obviously I like him enough to put him on the show. I think he is an outstanding guy. I think he is, the top job in any Libertarian Party, the top tier candidates, the races that people really get into and care about are president, governor, Senate, somewhat Congress. And then, your mayors, the executive positions. Rex is a small business owner. He has executive experience. He knows how to
lead.
To lead. He has been a consistent messenger of the Libertarian Party for a long time, of libertarian thought. And, you know, it's a marketing position, essentially. When we're talking about the top of the ticket, he is going to do a really great job. I said I wouldn't stump for you, but I did.
Sounds to me like you're stumping.
I know, and I didn't do as well as these two.
I know stumping when I see it.
Yeah, I didn't do nearly as well as these two. You're introducing him at the convention, Jeremiah. I'm going to finish up with the Pope. The Pope came out today and made some comments that the Donald is not a Christian because he wants to build a wall separating the United States and Mexico. And darn the Pope for making me defend Donald Trump after what Melissa Hubbard deemed a Trumper tantrum, which I thought was very funny. Because on the last episode, I had a Trumper tantrum. Isn't that the truth.
I feel like when you get an audience with Republicans, you just can't stop.
I can't.
And you like most of them. That's the funny thing. You like Rob, and it's like, let me tell you why you suck.
I don't know a lot of Democrats, but I have always gotten along better with Republicans, and I like them personally. I'm just very combative with them.
Yep.
Because Democrats, we know they're going to screw us because they tell us. Bernie tells me he's going to take all my taxes. But then, you know, those Republicans, they whisper sweet nothings of libertarianism in your ear during the campaign trail, and then they betray you with another lover called big government when they are elected to office. So I just, you know, they don't want... Yeah, you hear this all the time. Why don't you get inside and change it? You don't want me in your party. Trust me. I'm very irritated. So you don't want that. You want me right here in the Libertarian Party where I am not annoying you. I'm annoying people like Joe Houtman. So
poor Joe.
So we'll have Joe on soon. I'm going to talk to him on Saturday about coming on. So to talk about what it's like to be a state chair of the Libertarian Party and Libertarian Party's past. So, yeah, so... the Pope came out and said that Donald's not a Christian. And I just think that it is outrageous for a religious leader, especially the Pope's magnitude, the person divinely inspired to speak on earth on behalf of Jesus Christ, for him to say that the leading American presidential candidate is not a Christian because of he wants to push some policy that promotes nationalism that, you know, I just... It was such a stunning overreach. I haven't seen one Catholic, conservative, or liberal on my Facebook feed stick up for it. It just seemed like such an overreach and such a foot-in-mouth statement, and he's probably kicking himself for that one, and he'll walk it back. But, man, it just seemed really inappropriate.
Well, I mean, I thought it was... His point was grounded on building a wall. If you've ever seen the Vatican, there's arguably no better fortified country in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, literally Switzerland has a natural advantage. They built the wall. Like,
literally
Trump blushed when he said
it. Only country that is completely surrounded by a wall.
And then the fact that about being a Christian, well, I mean, if we're going to get specific, and I know I'm a libertarian, I'm going to get specific and detail-oriented. Christ wasn't a Christian. He didn't go around saying, I'm a Christian.
Right.
He didn't self-identify as a Christian fluid, you know, Elfkin.
It just seemed like he was, who was that liberal pastor that wrote all the books about God's politics? Jim Wallace, that back railed against. It just was.
Wait, what?
The guy who wrote the book.
The same name?
Yeah. His Wallis.
Same first name, too.
Yeah, I wonder why you guys jumped.
That was what it was.
No. It's the guy who is the pastor, and he wrote this book like, you know, if you support George Bush, you're not a Christian. You know, and so Dinesh D'Souza and all these other people wrote books. Well, if you support Michael Moore and Barack Obama, you're not a Christian. And then the libertarians get in there. Well, clearly Jesus was a libertarian. You know, and it's just like, just save it. Can we not mix our politics and our religion, please?
That would, though, be a total disregard of the course of human existence.
So, one final note. Congratulations to my baby sister. She is. She has just, while the podcast was happening, given birth to Josephine Marie Hamilton.
Wow, congratulations.
My new baby niece, who was born at 5 pounds, 10 ounces, which is the exact same weight that I was when I was born, so this young child is destined for greatness.
Are you going to groom her
as
your potential heir to libertarian?
The next generation?
Already has. They already have declined Christina Millicent Spangle Hamilton, which Christopher Miles, you know, so it was a natural fit.
I think you should probably create her Twitter account now. Make sure she gets her name today.
That is a great idea, yeah. Josephine, here's my birthday present to you, your Twitter account. Josephine Hamilton, so we got Josephine and Lorelai, my two sweet nieces. I'm very excited, so congratulations to them. You know, hey, thanks for donating. You guys are the best. We love you all very much, and we will see you very soon. We'll see you next week. So, I don't know. We really can't do much better than this, but we'll try.
We didn't really get after libertarians. He was a little edgy at first, and I thought he might do some lecturing. But
what was I going to lecture
about? Such aggressive and awful they are.
Don't
online.
Tear each other apart.
Yeah, that's another thing.
There we go.
So,
yes.
Now, we're going to get that cursing in after all. Here we go.
Listen, libertarians, you complete morons. Don't go on a candidate's Facebook page and be libertarians. We don't need your help. Poor Rex had this guy that has supported libertarians. He's like a Republican or independent or some crazy, you know, liberal who lives in the country, which I don't know how that's possible. And he's like helping Rex and he's, you know, supporting libertarians. And then some douchebag that lives out in Arizona or the mid. They're always from the West. They're never from Cleveland.
They have tents next to Area 51.
They're always out in Nevada or somewhere warm where the sun has melted their brain. And they get on there and they say, well, that doesn't square with libertarian propaganda. I read on Alex Jones and BlueRockwell.com that you're an ass. Oh, no, stop it. And then Rex has to meet this guy and say,